Good morning. It is time to get up with Tampa. And a stunning statement from the coach. One superstar is not joining TB in TB. We'll tell you who and why. Then, the dealing in Dallas is almost done. And Dak is going to cash in big. How did Jerry Jones get all of this so wrong? And then, LeBron looking ahead and outlines a plan for how his team can still win a championship this year. All those and more as we get up with you, starting right now. And a good morning on a Friday from Bristol. I'm Greeny, delighted that you've chosen to get up with us. Hope you are safe and sound and with people that you love. And as sports fans, we're going to get through this thing together. And today, I am telling you, we are jam-packed. We have an enormous amount of sports news. Let's start by getting up and going around the world of sports. And it starts in the NFL, where yesterday, Roger Goodell sent a memo to all 32 teams confirming that the draft will go on as scheduled at the end of April. Goodell said the NFL Management Council Executive Committee was, quote, unanimous and unequivocal that the draft should go forward as scheduled. He also warned against publicly criticizing the league for doing that. In the memo, he wrote in part, public discussion of issues relating to the draft serves no useful purpose and is grounds for disciplinary action. Everyone recognizes that the public health conditions are highly uncertain and there is no assurance that we can select a different date and be confident that conditions will be significantly more favorable than they are today. I also believe the draft can serve a very positive purpose for our clubs, our fans, and the country at large, and many of you have agreed. So that's the latest there. Elsewhere, baseball. Major League Baseball and its Players Association struck a deal last night on key economic issues as they hope to salvage their season. It covers salary advances, shortening the draft, and maybe most importantly, guaranteeing full service time even if the entire season gets canceled. Jeff Passan explained it all last night with Scott Van Pelt.
If there are no games played this year, then Mookie Betts is still going to be a free agent this offseason. Trevor Bauer, Marcus Stroman, JT Realmuto, big name guys who could have missed out on a year and had their free agency delayed by a year, they're going to be out on the market. And this was a big concession from owners, but one that they wanted to make because they understood if Major League Baseball is seen as the sport that is bickering amid this crisis, it is a terrible, terrible look.
That's a big deal from baseball. We get up and go to golf. The New York Post reports the U.S. Open, set for Wingfoot, is now going to be the third major to be postponed. The hope is that the suburban New York club can still host the event late this summer. The Open had been scheduled for June 18th through the 21st. To auto racing, the Indy 500 postponed until August 23rd, 3 months later than its originally scheduled date of May 24th. It will be the first time the Indy 500 won't run over Memorial Day weekend since 1946. And the NBA is reducing base salaries of approximately 100 of the league's top earning executives by 20%. Many of those impacted work in the headquarters in New York, including that man, the face that you know, that of the commissioner, Adam Silver. And then finally, back to football, and this is big. Buccaneers head coach Bruce Arians has put to rest any idea that Antonio Brown will join Tom Brady in Tampa. He was on the radio.com show Tiki and Tierney yesterday. Arians made it clear Antonio Brown is not in the Buccaneers' future.
What's the likelihood AB gets back in Tampa?
Yeah, it's not going to happen.
There you go.
It's not going to happen. There's no room.
Yeah.
And probably not enough money, but it's just not going to happen. It's not a fit here.
If he says, I'm coming in on the veteran minimum, coach, I just want to play with Tom, you still wouldn't find a way to get him in?
No.
Is it just because you don't trust what he could do to the culture? Why so steadfast that you would not give it a chance?
Yeah, I just know him, and it's not a fit in our locker room.
Wow. So that is a door shut as we open the door to two of our best. Booger McFarland and Bobby Carpenter are with me for this hour. It's great to see both of you guys. And Bobby, I'm going to start with you. For Bruce Arians to be so definitive in shutting the door that way, why do you think he made those comments?
Well, number one, Bruce Arians, Greeny, he knows Antonio Brown. He was on the Steelers. He was their offensive coordinator back in 2010 when they drafted him. He helped shepherd him to one of his most successful careers early on in 2011 that catapulted his career. So he knows this guy. He knows what he's about. And to say that he's not a fit in the offense is one thing. To say that it wouldn't work monetarily is another thing. To say that he doesn't fit in the locker room or he's not a culture fit, that is completely different. And I'm surprised that Bruce Arians went there, because that is completely slamming the door on Antonio Brown ever becoming a Buccaneer, in my opinion.
Me too. And Booger, I share Bobby's surprise that he would be this definitive. I think most of us believe Brady liked playing with Antonio Brown, and that was a good fit. We only saw them on the field together once, but it was very effective. What do you think of this?
Well, Greeny, I agree with you. And you know, when I get new information, I'm allowed to change my opinion. And right now, there is no new information on Antonio Brown. We don't know what his situation is going to be with the NFL. So Bruce Arians understands it's going to be a circus in Tampa whenever the league gets back going. So why add to it? Go ahead and squash the Antonio Brown situation for now. Do I think it's dead in the end? Not necessarily, because right now he doesn't have to say anything positive or negative or anything at all about Antonio Brown. He just has to right now control the narrative. And the narrative in Tampa, when they get back on the field, it's going to be a lot of hoopla. So why add to it with comments that would lead the public to believe that you somehow want Antonio Brown? So I agree with what he did, but I wouldn't say it's dead after all.
Well, you know, let me push back on that a little, because he could have said almost nothing, but he didn't. I wrote down the words, not a fit, definitively no, not in our locker room. I mean, he to your point, Booger, he didn't have to say those things, and he chose to. He really felt like he was slamming the door shut.
Yeah, and I understand what he's doing right now, because he doesn't want to continue to get asked the same question over and over. If, when, maybe, how. You go ahead and you slam the door now. But Greeny, how many times in sports have we seen someone say unequivocally no, and then come back on the back end and say, yeah, something came out and we changed our mind? So I'm not calling Bruce Arians a liar by any means. All I'm saying, let's sit back and see how this plays out, because we know Tom Brady likes Antonio Brown. And at some point, I think we all agree, if the commissioner suspends Antonio Brown and he gets reinstated at some point toward the end of the season, he's still a good wide receiver, and he's going to play at some point. Why not in Tampa? Maybe somewhere else, but I do think he'll be on the field if he's eligible to play.
Quickly, Bobby, let's talk about fit. We know they have two really good receivers in Tampa, and we know what Brady is. How would Brown fit there? What would his role be?
I think they probably slide him in, slide into the slot. Tom likes smaller wide receivers. He wants a guy that can maybe move around a little bit, like Edelman, like Wes Walker, utilize him over the middle. But I just look at this, when you keep going back to culture fit, not that he wasn't eligible, wasn't money, it wasn't any of those other things. It was a culture fit. To me, that's saying we like where our team's at. We don't want to disrupt this locker room.
Yeah, so we'll see. I guess, Booger, I will concede you this. He reserves the right to change his mind, and maybe eventually he does. For the moment, Bruce Arians has said Antonio Brown's not coming to Tampa. Let's work our way to Dallas, where the Cowboys are continuing their contract negotiations with Dak Prescott. Our Ed Werder yesterday tweeted that a source would not describe a contract resolution as close, but that discussions are not contentious, and that when it's all said and done, Prescott will emerge as the NFL's highest paid player. And here he is, the aforementioned Ed Werder, who's with us live here. Ed, how did we get to this point where now Dak Prescott is going to become the highest paid player in the football, in football history?
Yeah, I think a lot of people have that question, Green. And let's put this into some kind of context. First of all, Russell Wilson has the highest average in the league at $35 million a year. Jared Goff has the most guaranteed money in his contract at $110 million. Prescott, I think, can challenge those numbers because he's won games while making 64 consecutive starts. And he's created leverage by playing out his rookie contract, having the best statistical season of his career, and forcing the Cowboys to use the franchise tag on a quarterback for the first time in their history. Look, the Cowboys couldn't contend for a Super Bowl with Prescott counting $2 million on their cap last year. They certainly don't want to attempt that with him counting nearly $30 million or more while playing on annual franchise tags. It's just not a good solution for the Cowboys. They are going to have to reach terms with Dak Prescott on a multi-year deal. And I think the other thing that happened here, really to the detriment of Prescott after all the leverage it created, Greeny, was the fact that the NFL compressed the offseason. The only known deadline they face now is the July 15th deadline for franchise tag players to sign multi-year contracts. Otherwise, I think this deal would have gotten done before April 6th, because that's when the Cowboys, with a new head coach, would have been allowed to start offseason training camp and practices. Now that goes away, didn't create a, so there's no drop-dead deadline like there would have been in 2 weeks from now. So it could go on for a little bit longer. As you said, I don't understand it to be terribly close, But I think Dak Prescott's going to emerge as potentially the highest paid quarterback in football.
That's remarkable. That's so well done. Ed Werder, thank you very much. And as I bring Bobby and Booger back into this conversation, Hembo sent me the notes. So this, I'm just going to read you the names quickly of who has been the highest paid player in the NFL every year going back to 2010. It was Aaron Rodgers. Then it was Joe Flacco. Then it was Andrew Luck. Then it was Derek Carr, Matt Stafford, Jimmy Garoppolo, Kirk Cousins, Matt Ryan, Aaron Rodgers again. Now it's Russell Wilson. Booger, there's a trend here. It's just whichever quarterback is next in line winds up getting the biggest contract. Is that the way to explain how Dak Prescott, who happens to be the next in line, is going to be the highest paid player when he gets this deal in NFL history?
Well, Greeny, that's one way to explain it. I think all the quarterbacks want to continue to kick the can down the road. If you're next in line, you're going to become paid just a little bit more than the last guy. But also, I think if you look at Tom Brady and Drew Brees, look at their first 4 years of their career, and then look at Dak Prescott's numbers. I think from a comparative standpoint, the numbers are comparatively there, so you can start to see a trend of what Dak Prescott may be eventually. Now, is he going to go to 9 Super Bowls and win 6? I'm not saying that, but if we're just going to look at past performance and try to predict what he could be in the future, the numbers between Brady, Brees, and Prescott, they compare pretty good the first 4 years of their career.
And Bobby, let me ask you this, because I feel like you and I have talked about Dak's deal forever, and you are a former Cowboy. It feels to me like Jerry Jones has misplayed this terribly. This was a deal he could have gotten done a long time ago if he wanted to for a lot less money. He sort of put himself behind the eight ball with the way he, in my view, mishandled the Zeke Elliott situation, the deals he chose to make and the ones he chose to wait on. So now he's going to wind up paying Dak Prescott a lot more money than he probably had to. Do you see it similarly?
They probably should have gotten this deal done first. The problem was last season, Zeke forced the issue, and then they had to get Amari Cooper done. They had all these other guys coming up right at the same time. And when your quarterback's the most important, he's the guy you need to take advantage of and get paid early and get that taken care of right away. And our good friend Dan Orlovsky's talked about it. Teams get in trouble when you play good players, great money. And I think that that's the issue with the Cowboys. Not that Dak's not really, really good. But the problem is, if you pay him the highest dollar amount for any player in NFL history, you're expecting him to then play like the best quarterback, because how that's going to impact your salary cap, when in reality, he's probably somewhere between 4 and 10. And that's not a bad thing. But the problem is they waited on this. Now Dak has all the leverage. They have to tag him if they, you know, moving forward, if they don't get a deal done. And that's no way to handle the best player on your roster.
Booger, really quickly, I've been asking this question to everyone I've had on. When you look at the Cowboys offseason, this was an 8-8 football team that didn't make the playoffs in a bad division last year. Is there any reason to think they've gotten better?
No, Greeny, they haven't. And I think we're not going to know what the Cowboys are going to be until they get on the field. I want to see Mike McCarthy get his hands on Dak Prescott to see can he take the next step. But I think overall, when you look at what they've done roster-wise, you still see they need to do a lot to be competitive in the NFC East.
All right, we will see what winds up happening. There's a lot more football as we continue today. Booger and Bobby, Dan Orlovsky is on the way, and more. Also, as we continue, LeBron James has ideas for how to complete the NBA regular season and get into the playoffs. You'll hear what they are and why all the options need to be on the table. Plus, last year at this time, they were tanking for Tua. Just change the name this year. One NFL team may be tanking for Trevor. And Danny will tell us which one it is next. You're watching Get Up on ESPN.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at Geico, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the Geico Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring 3 advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
Get Up is brought to you by Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance. LeBron James spoke extensively for the first time yesterday since the NBA suspended its season. A little over 2 weeks ago, he was a guest on the Road Trippin' podcast with, among others, our friend Richard Jefferson, who's going to join us in our next hour. LeBron explained some of the challenges the NBA faces as it hopes and tries to get back on the court, especially if the games were to resume without fans in the arenas.
Having a game without fans is just what is sport? What is the worst sport without fans? There's no excitement. There's no crying. There's no joy. There's no back and forth. There's no rhyme or reason that you want to go on a road and just dethrone the home team because of their fans and vice versa. Like, that's what also brings up the competitive side of the players, to know that you're going on the road in a hostile environment. And yes, you're playing against that opponent in front of you, but you really want to kick the fans' ass too.
That's LeBron with RJ. And here is a guy who knows a little bit about sparring with Richard Jefferson a little bit. It's our buddy Jay Williams is with us. Jay, what did you think of that? These comments from LeBron about playing in empty arenas.
Well, I understand what LeBron was talking about. Obviously, playing with fans can bring out a different kind of energy, and you can respond to that if you have a moment of being tired mentally or physically. But then I would disagree with him because, you know, as hard as it is to manufacture your own energy, if you're playing in an arena without fans, Greeny, I would think and ask every NBA player, every athlete, implore them to be reflective of the times that we're in, right? So, yes, it is hard to manufacture your own energy, but at the same time, it's hard for my next door neighbor who's pregnant, who's about to have a kid, to have a kid in this environment, right, where her husband can't go into the hospital with her. It's hard when you see thousands of people staying outside hospitals waiting to get tests. So if there's one bastion of hope that we have as fans, is please take our mind away from what's happening currently in the world. And if the hard part for players is to play in an arena with no fans, then we have to do that. We need to do that because us as fans, we need our superstar players to lead the effort to take our minds away from this horrific place that we're in as a society right now. That's what we need, Greeny. So if the time comes up, I really hope that LeBron and everybody, as hard as it may be, they step up and they bring that energy. They bring that kind of excitement to the game that we all expect them to have, because this is what we need from them. This is what we need from LeBron James and all the great leaders in sports. Who cares about fans right now? We need you on the court. We need you on the fields to be the best at what you can do as a fan. That's what I'm in dire need of.
I so agree with that, and that's so well said, Jay. And you know, Adam Silver said to Rachel last week in their interview that he is taking into account that there may be a civic responsibility for the league and for the players to try and find some way to put some yes. entertainment out there for all of us who are starving for it. So I think that's very well said. Now let's get to the nuts and bolts of it here, because LeBron also had some intriguing comments about how the NBA could properly put together some playoffs if they are able to get back and do it after a hiatus. Here's what he said.
I mean, there's been so many conversations that's been tinkered around. I have not been on the calls. It's just my mind thinking and talking. There could be a best out of a three-team play-in. There could be, listen, there's five games left in the regular season. Let those four teams play each other, and then whoever got the best record out of that, maybe one, the final two teams had the best record, play each other for a game off to make the AC. One thing you can't just do, just go straight to the playoffs, because it discredits the 60-plus games that guys had, you know, fighting for that position.
So this is another part of it, right? There's two such completely distinct parts of this. There's how do we get everyone back on the court, and then once we do, what exactly is it we are doing? What do you think of that, Jay? How should they try and put together something that will create a champion?
Well, I like the scenario of a playoff round between those teams 8 and 11. I like those matchups to be able to see those teams kind of work into it. And I think inevitably, if you had three or four games that you're able to play as tune-up games leading into the playoffs, I think that would be good. I think the bigger question, Greeny, regardless of however you figure out the dynamics of the playoff seedings, is, you know, and they addressed it in the podcast, how do you keep guys safe from everything that's going on? And Richard Jefferson brought up the idea of, do you quarantine teams throughout their playoff run? And LeBron's like, I'm not trying to have any of that. He wants to be around his family. So I think that is the biggest, and I do not have an answer for it right now. I think Adam Silver and company are still trying to ponder over how to do this. But do you quarantine entire teams as they're on this playoff route to make sure that everybody stays safe and you don't have to worry about having a situation where after a game you find out that somebody has it because they've been around around somebody that they shouldn't be around. That's going to be the major question for Adam Silver and the league.
Absolutely. And Silver has repeatedly said, and I credit him for it, right now all options are on the table. There's no obvious reason at this point when we have really no way of knowing, whether we have a crystal ball of what the future is going to look like the next few months. Why take any option off the table right now? Let's see where it all winds up. Jay, it's great to see you. Great to hear your voice. Have a good weekend, my man, and we'll see you next week. There is other basketball to share this morning as well, because Warriors superstar guard Steph Curry had an Instagram chat yesterday, and his guest was one of the top medical experts on the coronavirus. That is Dr. Anthony Fauci. And he asked Fauci when fans can expect to resume mass gatherings like attending NBA games. Here's what he said.
We can start thinking about getting back to some degree of normality when the country as a whole is turned that corner and start coming down. Then you could pinpoint cases much more easily than getting overwhelmed by cases, which is what's going on in New York City.
And, you know, Fauci also did the Pardon My Take podcast. I give him a lot of credit for reaching out to places that he'll reach younger audiences. And speaking of Fauci and younger, this is Anthony Fauci when he was the captain of the Regis High School basketball team circa 1958. So in case you're wondering if he knows about more than pandemics, Anthony Fauci knows a little something about basketball as well. All right, as we continue here on Get Up, if he leaves Clemson early and declares for the draft, which team should consider not playing this well this season to try and get Trevor Lawrence? Tanking for Trevor, Dan Orlovsky will tell you after someone tries to guess the sneaky Hembo question. I'm told this one's for Bobby today. Which Heisman Trophy winner threw the most touchdown passes in an NFL season? That's the question. The answer's next. It's Get Up, ESPN.
It's your home speaking, and I need you to do me a couple of favors. First, could you get that blueberry that rolled under the fridge last week? It's throwing my feng shui off. Second thing, bundle your home and car insurance with GEICO. It's easy, and we could save money. Lastly, I know you were thinking of painting the nursery back to off-white, but I'm actually feeling this baby blue. Didn't think it was my color, but I am pulling it off.
GEICO. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
We are back on Get Up, and this is a great question from Hembo for Bobby Carpenter. Which Heisman Trophy winning quarterback threw the most touchdown passes in an NFL season?
So, as we're looking at this, I think Hembo wants me to go a variety of places. I'm going to go with the guys throwing a ton of interceptions as well. I'm going to go with Jameis Winston.
See, this is why this question is so devious, because Bobby knows we're about to talk about Jameis and Cam Newton, but the answer is Lamar Jackson. Both Cam Newton and Jameis Winston are on the list, but Lamar Jackson last year broke the record Cam had previously held. Chalk one up for Sneaky Hembo, who today was truly sneaky. And with that thought in mind, let's move to that subject, because two former number one overall draft picks at quarterback are still free agents, Cam Newton and Jameis Winston, both looking for new teams. Our buddy Booger McFarland had some thoughts about where Jameis and Cam should go. If you follow Booger on Twitter, if you don't, you should be. He tweeted, couple ideas. Who's going to be the Bridgewater for this year's Saints? Taysom is going to be the jack-of-all-trades guy again. Why not Jameis? Also, Jacksonville really comfortable with only Minshew? Why not bring in a veteran like Cam Newton? So, I like those. Booger, I'm going to start with you. Why do you like, because the Saints are obviously the playoff team in this, a Super Bowl contending team. Why do you like the idea of Jameis going there?
Well, Greeny, number one, I think Jameis still has a lot of talent. And if you look at the way the Saints run their offense, if Taysom Hill is still going to be that kind of wildcat guy, he can play quarterback, he can play tight end, he plays special teams, you really don't want your backup quarterback doing that. So who's going to be the true backup? Very similar to how Teddy Bridgewater was last year, because when Breeze got hurt, Bridgewater came in and started, not Taysom Hill. So they need a true backup down in New Orleans. And I would love to see Sean Payton get his hands on Jameis Winston. Winston has a ton of talent. You don't throw for over 5,000 yards in the National Football League without talent. He just needs someone to coach him up and help him with the turnovers. Why not Sean Payton, who's regarded as one of the greatest offensive minds in the National Football League? So I would love that fit for a number of reasons. primarily because I want to see what Sean Payton can do with Jameis Winston, and he would help them fill the Teddy Bridgewater role from last year.
Honestly, I love it. I don't know if that's where Jameis's head is right now or not, but I would love it. Bobby, what do you think?
Well, you know, the problem is I think he's got to go somewhere and he's got to be able to accept a backup role, and it can't be with a traditional coach who comes from, you know, the Bill Parcells and Belichick check tree of wanting to hold on to the football and not turn it over. If you look at Jameis last year, 6 interceptions on opening drives, absolutely terrible, 7 pick sixes, and Tampa had a good defense, but they were on the field more than anyone else. They had more drives than any other defense that you're going to see. They had a great defensive efficiency, but the problem was they were exposed so much on short field. So if you look at this, he's got to go someplace to accept a backup role. You know, you kick around Jacksonville. I don't think they're probably trying to win. I've heard people throw out Pittsburgh. That would make some sense to me. But he's got to have his head in the right space to be able to accept a backup role, because we've never seen him do it before.
Then let's turn our attention to Cam Newton, who also he became a free agent much later in the game than others did, just being released the other day. And there are some people out there who are kind of lobbying to try and bring in Cam. I can show you Leonard Fournette posted a picture of himself with Cam Newton trying to recruit Cam maybe to come to Jacksonville there. And then we also have one from Chargers quarterback Tyrod Taylor posting a picture of himself working out with Newton. So, Bobby, I'll start with you here. What makes sense for you as a good fit, a good landing spot for Cam Newton right now?
If you look at Cam Newton, his 2018 season, the first 8 games, it was really good. He threw about 19 touchdowns, 4 or 5 interceptions. That's very efficient football. That is winning football. And if you look at the LA Chargers, the team that they have assembled, they're ready to win now. They have a number of big-time guys coming up on contracts in the next 2 years. So they're going to be trying to move away to make sure that they can win in this window. And even if you draft a young quarterback, I still think Cam gives them the best option to do that. And their head coach, Anthony Lynn, likes a running quarterback, a guy that can move around. And while Cam may not be the athlete he was 5 or 6 years ago, he's still a threat with his feet when healthy.
All right, Booger, you brought up the Jaguars. Why does that make sense for you, for Cam?
Well, because I don't think anybody in Jacksonville is really hell-bent on going into the season with Gardner Minshew as the only guy. I get it. He's a character, the George, et cetera, et cetera. But if you're actually trying to be competitive, you need someone there, I think, at least at the very minimum, to push Gardner Minshew. And if you're Cam Newton, you got to feel good about your chances if you're healthy and the foot is right. If you can't beat out Gardner Minshew, then you're probably not going to start for a lot of teams in the National Football League. So I think Cam needs to play. Unlike Jameis, who I think needs to sit back and learn, I think Cam is at a point in his career he needs to go and be on the field. And the Chargers have kind of said they're going with Tyrod Taylor and probably going to draft a quarterback. So if that door is closed, then why not Jacksonville? He can go and compete and be ready to play if they need him.
All right, so a lot of what you said there made sense. But one of the things you said was if they're trying to be competitive. And with that thought in mind, I have Dan Orlovsky standing by, and I want to bring Danny into this conversation because you brought something up to me earlier this week off the air that I'd love you to bring on the air that I think will inform this conversation.
Yeah, I mean, the Jacksonville Jaguars are tanking. Am I the only one who thinks that their front office has decided to look forward to 2021? I mean, if you look back at really mid-October of last season and the trade of Jalen Ramsey for 2 first-round picks, one this year, one in 2021, and then a 4th-round pick. Then you move to Nick Foles this offseason, a guy that you just gave $88 million to, and you decide to move him for a 4th-round pick. And then you move Calais Campbell for a 5th-round pick, and then AJ Bouye for a 4th-round pick. So all of your best players that you decided 2 years ago were going to be the backbone of an AFC championship run, you've decided to trade away and acquire picks. And so this team, or at least this front office, to me has made it very clear. 2020 is going to be a season where they have one goal, to try and acquire the first pick of the 2021 draft so they can draft Trevor Lawrence out of Clemson, Greeny.
And so let's talk quickly about him, because it's not just about tanking in a vacuum. This is a quarterback. How would you describe the way you think evaluators view Lawrence as a prospect?
Once in a generation, he will be the highest rated and the most sought after prospect at that position since Andrew Luck. In many ways, talent wise, flawless. He's big. He's athletic. He's smart. He's got a live arm. He can make every type of throw that you need. Deep ball, ball that needs to be put on a rope, touch ball, outbreaking routes, inbreaking routes, incredibly hardworking, humble, intelligent, like everything that you want in a quarterback. They're going to look at Trevor Lawrence and say, not only is he good at it, he is great to elite at it. And that's why the Jaguars, and I know you're going to hate this, it makes sense to do what I think they're doing, to go get that number one pick to secure Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah, I don't hate it. It makes sense. I totally agree with you. And until they stop incentivizing losing in sports, teams are best served doing it. And there's no better time to do it than when a guy this good is available. Booger, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, that definitely could be a possibility, but I think they could do both. I mean, you could sign Cam Newton, and he's not going to require a big, hefty contract, so you can still, quote-unquote, tank, but why not kick the tires on Cam Newton? Bring him in. Let him compete. It's not going to cost you a ton of money, and guess what? If it fails, you can still be hopefully in a position to draft Trevor Lawrence. We talked about the Miami Dolphins tanking for Tua. The Miami Dolphins came out, and Brian Flores said, you know what? We're not tanking. We're going to go out and win. They were competitive. Their fan base was kind of happy. And now you look at a team that's set up with the fifth overall pick, and I think they're in the prime position. Unlike a lot of people who think three is the spot for Tua, I think the Miami Dolphins at five feel really comfortable. They can stand pat and get Tua Tagovailoa at five. And they didn't even have to tank if you go back and look at the end of last season, because they were very competitive in a lot of their games.
Hold on. I have to stop you there because it's not where we were planning to go. But you're the first person I've had say that. Let's focus on that a minute. You do not believe Tagovailoa goes earlier than five.
Well, Greeny, here's the thing. Everyone says at three, okay? Why would the Detroit Lions get rid of Matthew Stafford? I keep hearing people say the Lions and Tua Tagovailoa. I think the Detroit Lions feel really good about Matthew Stafford. You get rid of Slay, it makes sense to get Jeff Okuda the corner there. I would say this. If there's a team other than Miami at five, let's say the Chargers behind Miami. Let's say the Chargers want Tua. The Chargers would then have to come up above Miami,
right?
Because I think Miami at five would take Tua at five. Now, if Miami gets a feeling that that Los Angeles wants to come up, then maybe you have to move up to four. But I think the Dolphins feel really good, Greeny, about being there at five and thinking Tua will be there, because I don't think that the four teams in front of them, let's say those four teams stand pat, I don't think those four teams are taking Tua Tagovailoa.
That's fair, but we have been speculating all along that someone will trade up to three and maybe even two to get Tua. Bobby, I haven't had you on since we've been talking about this. Do you think that if the Dolphins pick fifth, that Tua will still be there?
He could be, but they'll have to go up to get him. But that going back to the Cam Newton conversation, what we were talking about, bringing him in, if he did what Ryan Fitzpatrick did for the Dolphins last year, that's why we're talking about this right now and the Dolphins having to move, because they played well enough that they won enough games that they're picking at five instead of picking at one or two. And so if they were really bad, they'd have the first or second pick. They'd have their choice. That's not what Jacksonville wants to do. And I do ultimately think the Dolphins will go up because they believe he's their guy and they do not want to get jumped.
All right, there's a lot there. Dan Orlovsky, thank you for jumping in, my man. Good to see you. Best of the family. We'll check in with you again next week. Meanwhile, my favorite athlete of all time right this minute, and it's everybody's, and there are so many who are doing what they can during this time, but Drew Brees and his family have really gone above and beyond. Maybe you saw this yesterday. Drew Brees and his wife, Brittany, announcing that they are committing $5 million to the state of Louisiana in order to help get their communities, quote, through this tough time. That's extraordinarily well done by Drew. And again, so many in and outside the sports world are doing what they can to help, but that is above and beyond. Tonight, Family Movie Night, presented by Target on ESPN and the ESPN app. The movie is The Rookie, starring Dennis Quaid, based on the true story of Jim Morris, who in 1999 went from high school physics teacher to Major League Baseball's oldest rookie in 30 years. It starts at 8 Eastern tonight on ESPN. Coming up, a college football national champion is crowned in January, but the season starts much earlier. You'll hear what Notre Dame coach Brian Kelly thinks is the date they need to start. Next, Get Up, ESPN.
GEICO has the insurance industry leading app that lets you manage your policy anytime, anywhere, which means that GEICO is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you. Like animal control, when you're cornered in your garage by an angry possum.
Hi, me again. You guys said you would be here about an hour ago, and I think the possum is starting to get angry. Listen, I thought if I fed it, it would go away, but now it is ripping holes in the drywall and making some sort of nest. Just call me back.
GEICO, always there for you with savings and the industry-leading mobile app.
We are back on Get Up, and there have been three moves this NFL offseason that could have very significant fantasy impact this year. One of them, of course, is DeAndre Hopkins moving to the Cardinals. He's second among all wide receivers in fantasy points over the last 5 years, behind only Julio Jones. Jones, of course, now has a new teammate, and that's Todd Gurley, who is headed to Atlanta from L.A. He was the number one fantasy running back in 15, 16, and 17. Well, I should say the number one running backs from those years all moved this offseason. He did, along with David Johnson and Devonta Freeman. And then, of course, with Tom Brady moving to Tampa, Brady is ranked outside the top 10 in fantasy points each of the last 2 years. But it'll have an impact on his receivers, who've been a very big piece of this. So we were thinking, you know, there's a big part of this that's fantasy. That feels very normal. Let's have a conversation about that with our friend Field Yates. And Field, it's great to see you. And I want to start there with Brady going to Tampa. Less about him, but how about the impact that he has on a pair of receivers who, with Jameis Winston, put up enormous numbers?
Yeah, Greeny, believe it or not, there really isn't an impact. And I mean that in a very kind way about both Chris Godwin and Mike Evans, because you take away the games they were injured last year late in the season, and Godwin was the number two scoring wide receiver on a points per game basis in fantasy, while Mike Evans was number five on a points per game basis in fantasy. Both of these guys are factors in the red zone, and although the team might be a little bit less pass happy because Tom Brady won't be putting them in multi-score holes like Jameis Winston did with all those interceptions last year, the ability of these players plus the propensity to throw it deep under Bruce Arians sets them up for another monster year and puts Brady actually back in that top 10 quarterback range, which, as you just alluded to, has not really been his home of late.
All right, and then let's talk about some of the other new guys who've moved from one place to another and what that impact will be.
Yeah, let's begin in Miami, where, believe it or not, last year, Greeny, Ryan Fitzpatrick led the Dolphins in rushing. Now they add Jordan Howard, who's a solid player. He's got two 1,000-yard seasons in his career already, and things could change in the draft. But as things are right now, he's the clear-cut workhorse in that Dolphins backfield and could be on pace for another 1,000-yard season. And speaking of a guy that's sort of back from the dead in fantasy football, David Johnson, in 2016, he scored 20 touchdowns. He had 80 catches. He had over 1,000 rushing yards. Last year, he had less than 100 carries as he got benched for Kenyon Drake. He's in Houston and has a major impact on that offense, as he should be not just a focal point in the running game, but also a receiver as well. Now, as much as it pains me to say this, his quarterback, Deshaun Watson, actually has a little bit of a stock downfield to him right now. Now, I still love Deshaun Watson. We all do. And he's still going to be one of the 5 or 8 top drafted quarterbacks, but last year he was number two amongst quarterbacks in terms of fantasy points per game. And when you lose DeAndre Hopkins, Greeny, it doesn't matter who you are. Somebody is going to have to take a little bit of a hit, with Lamar Jackson and Patrick Mahomes and Kyler Murray and Russell Wilson and others. Deshaun Watson closer to quarterback 5 this year than quarterback number 2.
You know what? That is exactly what we wanted. We thought, we have no idea when fantasy drafts are going to take place, but it would feel very normal to hear Field Yates breaking some of this down. It was a pleasure to do it. Have a great weekend, Field. Thank you very much for jumping in. Meanwhile, due to the spread of the coronavirus in the U.S., some Power 5 conferences canceled all spring sports, which includes college football. Our Kirk Herbstreit was on ESPN Radio last night with some thoughts about how there may not be any football anytime soon.
I'll be shocked, honestly. I haven't talked with anybody. I'll be shocked if we have NFL football this fall, if we have college football. I'd be so surprised if that happens. Just because, from everything I understand, people that I listen to, you're 12 to 18 months away from a vaccine. Until you have a vaccine, I don't know how you can let these guys go into locker rooms and let stadiums be filled up and how you can play ball. I just don't know how you can do it with the optics of it. If I'm a commissioner or I'm in charge, if I'm the NCAA, I just don't know how you can do that. Next thing you know, you got a locker room full of guys that are sick, and that's on your watch. I wouldn't want to have that. So as much as I hate to say it, I think this is we're scratching the surface of where this thing's going to go. I don't know if people realize what it takes to get ready for an NFL season, you know, what it takes to get ready for a college football season. I mean, you don't all of a sudden come up with something in, I don't know, July or August and say, okay, we're good to go. And turn them loose.
If you can't start training your football team by July 1, uh-huh. you're going to need at least 4 weeks. Strength and conditioning coaches are going to want six. You know, sports medicine is probably looking at, you know, 4 to 6 weeks. I think the realistic goal here is minimum of 4 weeks of conditioning before you put them in camp. You know, college football is going to be affected if we're not playing in 90 days in terms of the conditioning element in getting these young men ready.
So that was Herbie and then Brian Kelly, of course, who was on with Scott Van Pelt the other night, talking about a date by which he feels they need to be back on the field. And, Bobby, I want to start with you because you're so close to this there at Ohio State. What are you hearing from the people inside of the program as far as what they think they need in order to get the kids back on the field?
Well, they need some sort of modification in the summer because typically there's no contact between the position coaches, the head coach, and the players. So the conditioning is one piece of it. They're going to have to find a way to make up for spring ball. So I wouldn't be surprised if they have some sort of hybrid with OTAs where they can get guys involved. But let's don't make no mistake about it. If there's no class at schools, then there's going to be no football because there won't be anybody in school to play. The second big piece of this, in college sports, football, the majority of schools funds everything else year-round. A lot of the big-time programs like the Ohio States, the Bamas, the Michigans, they're bringing in over $100 million. That funds their winter and spring sports. If they do not have football in the fall, you're losing the gate, you're losing TV contracts. But even if you just cut the gate, that's half. That is going to be a huge void that they're going to have to find a way to make up. And these aren't rich NFL owners. They are nonprofit institutions, and that's going to be a serious, serious issue.
It's a point I'd like you to expand on here because we could talk about the NFL potentially playing in empty stadiums because so much of the NFL's money comes from television. But in college, they really do depend on those ticket sales, right? That's an incredibly important piece of the puzzle economically.
You look at some of these huge stadiums, they seat 100,000 people. And so when you start doing the math on that, $60, $70, $80 a ticket, you average it out, you know, they may be bringing on their TV deals. They could potentially be bringing in $50 million, but they might bring in $70 to $80 million with their gate, with the concession, with the traffic. And so that's a huge piece of this. And like I said, that money, it doesn't support football solely. It supports everything else. So if you cancel fall sports, there's a good chance that you might not be having a lot of winter sports or spring sports as well.
What do you think, Booger?
I completely agree with Bobby. And from a football perspective, you know, we always talk about the quality of football, the quality of the product. Understand this. If guys don't get an opportunity to practice, get the chemistry, get the timing, think about all the schools that are breaking in new head coaches, new offensive coordinators, new defensive coordinators. With no spring practice, no summer training, you're going to be behind. And you got to realize you don't want to put the kids at a disadvantage because although we want them to train on their own, how many guys can actually train and get ready for football while quarantined at their house? So I agree with Bobby. There are a lot of effects both on and off the field.
All right, we'll wait and see. And obviously, I think Scott Van Pelt has been saying it right at night. It costs us no more to be optimistic than it does to be pessimistic. Obviously, sitting here, I have no control over when these things will or won't come back. We can all just sort of hope for the best. I hope that we do have football this fall, pro and college. And if that's Pollyannish, then we'll just have to wait and see. Guys, thank you very much. We'll come back to you for more in a moment. There's something else I think we need to talk about today. You know, when I was a kid, there was absolutely nothing in sports that was more fun than going to see the Harlem Globetrotters. And the man that you see on your screen, Fred Curley Neal, was maybe the single most important reason. The legendary Globetrotter died in Houston yesterday. He was 77. No details have been released yet on the cause of death. But I can tell you that before the internet and cable television really existed, Curley Neal and the Globetrotters introduced the sport of basketball to millions of fans across the globe. And we could just let this video play, as far as I'm concerned, for the remainder of the morning, and I would never get tired of watching it. His shooting, his ball handling skills, his smile, his iconic bald head, all those things made him a legend. And I'll just say this briefly, that when I was a kid, basketball wasn't nearly as popular as it is now. So the stars in the world of the NBA were nowhere near as famous as they are today. Guys like Curley Neal and Metal Ark Lemon were absolutely as famous as the players who played on NBA teams. And so I can finish it by saying this. Curley Neal probably made as many people smile as any athlete that ever lived. And I cannot imagine having a better epitaph in or outside of sports than that. So rest in peace, Curley, and thank you for all the fun.